The God of Mischief is back and better than ever.
Loki.
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 Loki. Wow. Great to see you again.
Critics agree Loki Season 2 is...
marvelous.
Great.
And it's finally here.
How much do you know?
Let's assume I don't know much.
A mind-bending adventure. Spectacularly cinematic.
I've been waiting for a moment like this.
It surpasses all expectations.
A little over the top, don't you think?
I thought it was spot on.
Loki Season 2. Now streaming only on Disney Plus.
You are listening to Absent Minded, brought to you by Habs Eyes on the Prize.com.
Hello and welcome to Absent Minded. It's Patrick Bexell. It's a full crew because we need a full crew to get through all the cuts that was made yesterday late on Saturday night. Some big names going the way we maybe didn't expect, some big names going the way we did expect. But anyways, I'm here. We got Matt Drake watching NFL in the morning.
Yeah, it's nice to have football this early at my time. I'm in Atlantic time, so usually I got to wait a little bit. It's around 2 p.m. before it gets started, but bright and early this morning. It's beautiful.
And obviously we have Anton Rosegård, who is waiting for the big football game between Hammarby and IFK of Gothenburg, obviously.
Yeah, I'm actually working this NFL game now. So, yeah. So I have to do that first, and then I can watch the European-style football.
Indeed. And Jared just returned home from kindergarten or play thing or whatnot.
Oh, just went out for breakfast. But I just want to say that Pat was on the ball. He's like, we need to have a podcast for the cuts. And I'm the one who was saying, oh, no, there's not going to be any big names. There's not going to be any surprises. We don't need to be prepared. And sure enough, I was very wrong.
Let's start with the biggest cut, maybe, or the most unexpected cut. Matt, Joshua Roy, are you having your flag on half post today?
I mean, yeah, I'm a little bit irked by that one. I thought that he played well enough to earn himself a longer look at camp. I thought he played well enough at least to be one of the last cuts if he was going to get cut at all. What we saw in the two preseason games that he played was a player who clearly is capable of playing NHL games this season. Now, I don't think him being cut is necessarily a proclamation that he's not going to play any NHL games this year. I think, you know, with the way he's been playing, if he continues that level of play with Laval, I think he'll put himself very quickly at the top, if not the very top of the call-up list, you know, if and when injuries happen. But it was still a little bit disappointing to me. I would like to see him at least in one more game. And I've been beating this drum all throughout the preseason and camp is try him on the wing with Cole Caulfield and Nick Suzuki. I'm not saying that you need to do it for the entire season and put him there as of game one on the opening night, but just try it out and see if it works because they've still been experimenting with a number of different players. I think so far the best look they've had is probably Alex Newhook. I don't know if everybody else agrees with that or not, but I would say for my money, Alex Newhook has looked the best as the third on that line. But I really think Joshua Wack could be the guy of the future. And maybe that's going to be a year, 2 years down the road, but why not test it out now while you're experimenting with different options for those two? So it was disappointing for me to see them send him down. I don't think it's the end of the world, but yeah, it was a bit tough for me to see that happen so early.
Another player, Owen Beck. We did expect this though, but going back to juniors, Jared.
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise with both of those players, I mean, we knew it was a long shot for either one of them, but the big surprise for me was the timing of it. And yes, there's only two preseason games left. I think that's a factor. But also, I think that last year, you know, a lot of people accused them of just like not making a decision on Slafkovský, right? Like they were just like waiting and waiting and waiting and, you know, are they going to put him to AHL? And then he ends up getting hurt. This year, they're just not messing around. Like you know, sending Reinbacher right back to Switzerland, you know, Beck going back to junior. And Beck is probably the most surprising because they can't call him back up, right? He's in junior for the year now. And while, you know, he can be called up in the second game of the season if somebody gets hurt. But yeah, I think the big surprise is that the timing, but then also you factor in that there's only two preseason games left and they hadn't made any cuts yet. So maybe that's what the mental side of it is, just that the timing seems off for a lot of people. But we have to realize that there's only two games left until the season starts, and it comes really fast.
We also have to remember that the Laval season starts in 2 weeks, and Jean-François wants to obviously get to know his players. So there is a reason for him to get his roster going as soon as possible, because right now the Habs are really in developmental mode. Now it's not only about drafting new players. Now it's about developing the young guys you already have, who are now 20, 21, 22, 23. And obviously you already have a roster of NHL guys who you want to maybe move on from in a year or two, but you want these young guys to take their spot. And to do that, they need to feature heavily. You don't want them to just come in and play a bottom six role in the NHL. You want them to play heavy minutes to be able to develop and make mistakes in the AHL before they make them in the NHL. And obviously, I think it's the right decision to just basically kill your darlings here and now and let them develop in their time. Like, I think it was someone mentioning this in our internal chat, like, Owen Beck obviously is probably too good for the OHL right now, but Nick Suzuki was an extra year in the OHL and he turned out all right. So, for example, like, there is always a lot to work on when you are this, you know, this young guy. And guys like Joshua Roy, Riley Kidney, all of these guys, they will develop probably more. Sean Farrell is another one, develop more from having a big role in Laval and then getting called up than to start the season in the NHL.
We also saw that they cut everyone that didn't need waivers, more or less,
for sure,
in order to make sure that everyone is treated the same way. And also, you're going back to the drawing table, as you said, Anton, to develop properly.
Yeah, yeah. And like, the Habs have, excuse the language, but fucked up development a lot of times before. So like, this way you actually, you want to be good in 3 years. And to do that, you have to have patience. Even if I would have loved seeing Joshua Roy, for example, have a breakout season playing 75 games in the NHL and you know, scoring 35 points, that would be great. But I would rather that he is in it for the long run and doesn't just burn out like Jesperi Kotkaniemi did with the Habs.
Yeah, and all of that makes sense. Like, the Laval roster construction in general, wanting to get a head start on that, like you said, with the games coming up pretty quickly. But that's where, with Owen Beck, it's kind of an odd decision to send him back so early, because what's the rush, right? We know that he's probably, as you said, too good for the OHL at this point. Is that a problem for him to go back to the OHL? No, everybody always expected that to be the case this season anyways. And then he'll get, at the World Juniors, he's probably going to get significant minutes for Team Canada after coming in last year as a late replacement. I don't see a universe where they don't give him a much bigger role this time around. But that being said, the Habs, there was no rush. They could have held on to him and given him at least one more game, and he would have benefited from that experience, I think. So I think, you know, the whole Laval situation, it makes sense to start that a little bit earlier. But then Owen Beck, where does that leave him? Because he could never go there anyways. Why not hold on to him, give him an extra?
But it comes down to managing the number of contracts and players opening night, along with the fact that you need someone to clear waivers. He doesn't need waivers. You clear him at the same time when all the other teams does, because no one has any more spots.
But opening night is October 11th. You got plenty of time to deal with your contract situation before that happens. You still could have given Owen Beck the one game. It's not hurting him in the slightest. If anything, it's just benefiting him with that extra level of experience.
But he's already played in two preseason games. There are only two.
And he's played in a regular season NHL game too.
No, but I mean, there's no reason to keep him around.
Because
even if he plays one more game, but this is the point of the preseason where you want to get your lines. Like, we don't even know what the lines are going to look like yet. I'm sure Martin Saint-Louis has an idea, but we probably haven't seen them play together, and that's what you really want to focus on these last two games. I think that's, because we're looking at this through the lens of, these are the first round of cuts, which they are, but it's also two preseason games left. Like, it's a weird structure of camp that we're not used to, and I think that's a difference as well. But go back to what Anton said about Laval. They've lost, like, I think close to 1,000 games in AHL experience. between Alex Belzile, Anthony Richard, Corey Schoeneman. You know, if you factor in, you know, Raphael Harvey-Pinard, you know, maybe Jesse Ylinen. There's a lot of guys that have a lot of AHL experience, you know, and this gets them, you know, like Anton said, you know, two preseason games, and that they need Laval to be good this year. And You look at their start last year, you know, they lose their first game of the season in overtime. They lose the second game of the season. They only won two of their games in October, two of their eight games in October. And I think that's a factor, right? They barely made the playoffs a year ago, and they had to play in the play-in round. And, you know, they can't afford to have a bad start. And there's so much turnover. I kind of like the Canadians just not messing around, right? Like, we've seen them hang on to guys near the end of camp. You know, they did it with Joshua Wall last year. He was around until the very end. They did it with Brendan Gallagher in his first year when he was 18 before sending him back to junior. And I think that there's, or maybe it was his second year when he was 19. But either way, they took them to the end of camp. And I just like that they're not messing around. Like they could have kept on having around David Reinbacher for another week, and they didn't. And I think that this is, I like that they're not messing around. I like that they're like sure in their decisions. They're like, no, we're not letting what we saw affect our decision-making. We know what we're doing. We know we had a plan for them. Let them go to Laval, learn. You know, they're going to be getting big minutes in Laval, right? Joshua Wa, Sean Farrell, like that's probably their top line, you know.
And you know, like you mentioned it, getting prepared and sorting things out here. But you also learned from the mistakes with Norlander and Heinemann that got injured very late and then had troubles coming back into
that's
the
why
rosters
keep,
in Europe.
Keeping them again this year.
What if Owen Beck gets hurt in the preseason game he plays on Monday? And then he misses the first part of his junior season, right?
Oh, like, come on now, though.
No, but like Pat said, it happened with Norlander and Heinemann in back-to-back years. Like, it's not it's that outlandish a situation.
Well, what if hockey's a dangerous sport?
Yeah,
right? I mean, what if hockey's a dangerous sport?
No, but you're going right about the wrong way. I'm saying, like, they had trouble getting back into the lineup. Owen Beck will not have trouble getting back into the lineup in the OHL.
No, and that
Reinbacher might struggle with an injury and getting back into the Nationalliga, especially with the way Claughton is in the standings right now.
No, but it's also like with Owen Beck as an example, you already made the decision that he's not going to make the team this year because he's not, like, you have 12 or 13 guys who are contract bound and you can't just send them out on waivers to just throw a young guy into the fire. So you've already made the decision pretty early, probably, that, well, since we can't send him to the AHL, we're going to send him back to the OHL. The OHL season has already started. Peterborough has played Kingston and Ottawa. They're playing Sudbury the 5th of October. So why not send him back now? Like, he's going to play the year in the OHL regardless. He has gotten a taste now of NHL preseason minutes for two seasons in a row. He already made his debut last year. Great. He takes valuable experience with him back to the OHL, the Habs and Adam Nicholas and all these, you know, individual development guys. They tell him what he needs to work on this year because he's already one of those guys that is too good for the junior leagues, but he's not available to play in the AHL yet. So great. There is no reason to keep him around. So I don't, like, what would he gain in experience just by playing, you know, 15 more minutes in preseason against, well, mostly probably AHL guys, AHL opponents? I don't think it's enough compared to what he will, you know, go back to Peterborough and just be a leader on that team for an entire season from the get-go.
That's where I got to jump in, though, because it's not going to be mostly AHL guys anymore. Other teams are making cuts, too. You give him that one more game, he's going to be like, the competition's going to stiffen a little bit towards the end of the preseason. It's going to be closer to an NHL roster that you're playing against. It gives him, whether it's 15 minutes, whether it's 12 minutes, whether it's 10 minutes, irrelevant. He's going to get a chance in one of those games as other teams start to trim down their camp rosters as well to really see, where am I at, right? What do I need to improve upon? It's a learning experience. And I just think if they had given him that one last shot, like, I bet you any money we go to tomorrow's game against Toronto. So far, we haven't seen Matthews. We haven't seen Marner. We haven't seen John Tavares. Some of those guys are going to be in tomorrow against the Habs. And you might have had a chance to give Owen Beck, you know, and maybe this is, you know, throwing somebody into the fire a little bit, but at the end of the day, he gets a chance to go up against a guy like John Tavares a couple of times. I think there's a lot of value in that.
But I think the Canadians have really hard decisions to make at forward, right? Like one of, at least one of Elias Anderson, Joel Armia, Raphael Harvey-Pinard, Emil Heinemann, Michael Pezzetta, Jesse Ullinen will not be in the lineup opening night, at least one of them. And we don't know which one that is. And some of them need waivers to go down. Like they need to make decisions on which players are going to be on that fourth line, which players are going to be scratches, which players they're going to
trade.
They need to play those guys
More than
they need to play Owen Beck.
Because I understand what
you're saying.
Owen Beck will get his minutes. He will get his minutes next year to develop, and he will get probably significant game time in the AHL as well. If he doesn't develop like just enormously and just makes the team out of camp, he will probably go the same route as Joshua Roy, Sean Farrell, Riley Kidney, all of these guys do now. But as Jared just said, like there are a ton of guys who are fringe NHL players at this time, at this point, and they need to prove themselves if they are going to be number 8 in the lineup or number 12 in the lineup or number 14 in the lineup, or if they're going to get sent down to the AHL. They need those minutes more than Owen Beck at present.
And let's leave this discussion a little bit, because Matt touched on something very, very interesting. One of the exclamation marks in camp has really been Logan Mailloux. He was really bad in the first game, got a little bit better, but he's gotten better with every game and with less hero complex and playing a smarter, easier game as a defender. It will be very interesting to see him face Tavares, Matthews, and Marner coming up, though. Wouldn't it, Matt?
It really would, because I think you hit the nail on the head there. The one thing that I've noticed more than anything is he's a lot more reserved in this camp than you would have seen him with his junior style of play. In junior, when he was with London, you know, when he winds up behind his own net and starts to go, you could bet your house on the fact that he's going to try to go end to end. And a lot of the times he'd run himself right into trouble. So he'll skate directly into a defender and kind of just end the threat. So you'll get this wow factor skating up the ice. And then as soon as he crosses the blue line, he runs into a defender. He's not doing any of that at camp so far with the Habs. He's using his legs to get out of the zone, and then he's playing off of his teammates. He had in the preseason game, I want to say, was it against the Devils? He had a really nice exchange with Juraj Slafkovský where he ended up getting in and getting a shot, or not a shot on goal, but he came around behind the net and threw it out into the slot for a decent scoring chance. And that more reserved nature, I think, is something that he's learning clearly from camp, because he was not learning that in London. In London, he had the green light to go whenever he wanted to. I think the Habs coaches have been able to rein that in a little bit. And now his athletic abilities are being able to shine a little bit more because he's not trying those ridiculous hero puck plays. And, you know, there's still definitely some warts in the defensive zone. But you're never going to turn him into a guy that stands in front of the net and you know, blocks a bunch of shots like a Ben Sherratt or something. He's never going to be that player. He's always going to be a guy that's a little bit more offensive minded. The whole game for the Habs has to be, how do you put him in a position where his athletic abilities are going to be able to shine? I think so far they've been able to do that pretty well. And I am, however, a little bit surprised that he's still at main camp. I would have thought that he would have been right there with Joshua Roy down to the Rocket, because I do think when there's full NHL lineups out there, those defensive zone issues are going to become increasingly problematic when it comes to Mailloux. So I agree 100%. I'd love to see if he can get out for that game tomorrow. And let's see, how much have you been able to coach him up so far? How can he stay as reserved when he's up against some of the best players in the world?
Yeah, Logan Mailloux for me has been one of the players that has improved the most over this preseason. Like that, he's learned already a little bit what he can and can't do, and has already put that into practice. Right, like the game against the Devils, I there were a couple of times when he went like 1-on-4, and the puck went back the other way, and you know, in the game against Toronto, his last one, I think on Friday night. He wasn't doing those plays anymore. He was being more, you know, smarter with the puck, smarter with his decision making, and you know, the improvement over just a few preseason games has been a lot better than I was expecting. Because like Matt mentioned, like he's been playing that way for years, right? Like, especially all last year in London, he was just basically, I'm going to do everything myself. And I think that's a testament to him that he's learned kind of how to make those changes really quickly. And that's why he's still in camp, is that, you know, if he can rein that in and still kind of show a little bit of those abilities, it's very interesting. And I think that he spent half a year, 2 years ago, just practicing, right? Like he was suspended for half a year. He's been hurt. He's been rehabbing. He just needs games, right? Like they can play him on Monday night, send him back to the Rocket afterwards, and he can get two preseason games with the Rocket. And really be able to play games, because I don't think he needs practice. Like he doesn't need to be there on Monday in Laval and do another practice, right? He's been doing that in rookie camp. He's been doing that through training camp. I think there's more value in for him specifically to get those game reps, especially against what should be a really good lineup in Toronto. I would expect that he plays in that game. I would expect that Matthias Norlander plays in that game, because I think that you need to see what they can do. And not only for opening night, I think they're both long shots for opening night, but I think that you need to see, hey, if a defenseman goes down and we need to call somebody up, who can we trust in Laval? I think they already know they can trust William Trudeau.
Yeah.
Who else can they trust?
Norlander could be that kind of power play defender that Erik Gustafsson sort of was brought in to be, and Chris Widerman has been as well. But he's used to run a power play in the SHL, arguably with a bigger ice surface. But if he gets things going, he has the speed. He knows he's played with one of the top European power plays. He should be able to bring some knowledge into the power play options as well, because it certainly seems like Burrows isn't. What do you think about that, Anton, with a Swede on the blue line again on the power play?
No, that would be great. Like I was going to say, like Matthias Norlander has been a great story, because he was basically written off. I remember when we did the top 25 just a couple of weeks back, and we were basically...
You make a top 25.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He was down in the 30s, right? If I don't remember 32? Correctly.
Could it 30, be that?
Yeah, something like that. T25, I'm going to check here. But he was up at fourth position at one point, right? So he was one of our most, we were very hopeful for his development. And obviously, both, you know, derailed, his career has been derailed by injuries and not really finding his role last season in Laval. But he was saying to me when I was talking to him back in April that all he needed last year was basically minutes. And he was disappointed with himself as well, that he didn't really find the offensive output that he wanted to, like and those kind of like his rushing ability and his ability to basically see the whole field and find the outlet passes and all that. This year he was 31st on the top 25. I had him 36th, for example. I had basically given up on him, and now he looks like someone who could actually get a chance in the NHL this season, barring injuries, basically. But it's great. Like if he ends up being that kind of gadgety Erik Gustafsson player, then, you know, there are teams that pay quite a bit of draft capital and assets for that kind of player if they are going for a playoff push. So if it ends up being in Montreal or somewhere else, I mean, he's already 23, but it's just great to see his development back on track and that he plays with more confidence than he did last year. Jan Mišek was kind of the same. Like they were in the same role last year, where they didn't really make that sort of impact in Laval that you would maybe hope for, especially points-wise. But they both looked considerably better in the preseason here. So maybe if they get sent down with, well, Mišek has already been and Norlander will probably be sent down, I expect them to... have a better season in Laval this year.
Yeah, and Modo won't need Norlander, because Modo is, you know, third in the standings in SHL.
Norlander is trying things. And I think that's the one thing he wasn't doing in Laval. And he mentioned it himself. Like he spoke after the red-white scrimmage, where he's like, yeah, you know, like the one thing I've learned the most is how to use my speed with the small ice and you know, there has to be a certain amount of risk to his game, right? Like, Logan, we talked about Logan Mailloux, and I think there's a good comparison there, because Logan Mailloux, even though he's being more reserved, he's still showing those he's still trying things, right? They haven't clipped his wings completely. And Norlander, I think that he, because of the way that he was handled, being pushed into the NHL when, you know, he wasn't ready, being pushed to the AHL when he didn't know he could even play in the AHL, right after being injured in the preseason, I think that he's basically been trying to learn how to swim while avoiding how to drown. And I think that now he's finally starting to be able to try things and not just be in survival mode all the time. And I think that that's something that he's kind of gotten to his head that he can do again. And if he can bring that back to Laval, we're going to see a very, very different Matthias Norlander and Laval, because he's doing things in the NHL preseason that he didn't do. You know, you watch highlights of his time in Europe, and, you know, he's doing these dangles and like going through guys, and you really didn't see that in Laval at all. And I think, yes, so part of that is the competition, part of that is the smaller ice, but also I think a lot of it is just he doesn't have the confidence to do that. And, you know, he's kind of scared that if he does try that, he'll be benched for the rest of the season. So I think that him trying things is a big reason why he's been so successful. And I think he understands that too. I think he's learned that. And I'm really happy for him, because he's a guy, he's easy to cheer for, right? Pat knows him. Anton is talking to him. He's just an easy guy to cheer for. And I think that he's finally getting it. He finally understands it. And I think that's a big reason why he's still in camp and why he's shown as much as he has.
I think we touched on the power play briefly there, but one thing I got to say, I really hope that they're not making cut decisions based on what personnel they think can help them on the power play. It's not a personnel issue. It's a fucking strategy issue. I don't think Burrows has a strategic bone in his body. It seems like every single power play is the same thing. Drop pass in the neutral zone. Everybody stand flat-footed at the blue line until the puck carrier gains the line, and then we'll see what happens. It's like there's no rhyme or reason to it. Toronto last night was just sitting in the diamond and just waiting for them to make a pass that came into one of their lanes and get a stick on it, and then have one guy chase it down and maybe get into a board battle and try to knock it out of the zone. And it was working. Toronto wasn't doing anything special. They were just sitting in that diamond all night long, and the Habs couldn't do anything, yet they were dominant at 5-on-5. So I think it's a strategy issue, not a personnel issue. If they're hanging on to Logan Mailloux, Matthias Norlander, whoever, thinking, oh, this guy's the answer on the power play, they might be, but not unless you change the strategy, right? We saw against Toronto when they had the extra skater out at the end of the game and they were trying to score. Logan Mailloux actually got two pretty decent opportunities all on his own to shoot, and he has a ridiculous shot, but he sailed them both over the net and hit the glass. So, you know, it's not, for me, a personnel issue on the power play. It's absolutely a strategy issue. Yes, you have the personnel already. The question is, how do we restructure this so we can actually get something out of it? Because it's been absolutely atrocious so far.
Will Alex Burrows still be on the coaching staff come next season?
I'd fire him right now.
I was going to say first January.
I mean, Alex Burrows has made a career and this is, I don't mean to make fun of Alex Burrows, but I mean, his success in the power play came by passing the puck to the Sedins, right? So, I mean,
well, he should be able to pick up some things that the Sedins did right, right?
Get a speed on the power play.
Nathan said it when we were complaining in the EOTP chat in the other, I think it was the first of the two Toronto games, and I was in there complaining about the power play, and Nathan came in and he said, you know, pass it to Daniels, not really a scheme for your power play, is it? Especially if you don't have Daniel Sedin in the first place.
Hey, it was Henrik that always passed it as well, but don't forget that.
Well, there's two secondary of them. Both look the same, and they both share a brain. So, I mean, it's,
I take either one right now, Pat.
Funny story, though, when I was going to interview Henrik during the World Cup for Eyes on the Prize, I asked some of the other media members, how do I spot the difference between them? And they went like, you look at the sticks. If it says H. Sedin, it's Henrik.
Man. And that's, I think that's the main issue. I really think that he's got this, you know, pedigree from having played on such a good power play at one point in his career that maybe this guy knows how to do it. But what I'm seeing on the ice, I don't see any adjustments. I see the same thing over and over again. I see it not working, and I don't see them being willing to make any adjustments on that front. So I really think they need to sit down and figure that out before they start looking at making personnel decisions based on what could or could not help the power play.
That we haven't spoken about is David Reinbacher coming back to Switzerland and Europe. I have thought of figured out that this is what they were going to do since I spoke with Steve Kellenberg in the captain of Kloten. Even if he didn't say it straight out, it was something between the lines. Reinbacher himself has asked to go back in order to finish school. And what many people that complain about not sending him to Laval right now are the same kind of people that complained about, you know, keeping Potkaniemi or Slavkovsky around for longer maybe than needed. They make a decision, then send him back. He's going to get a ton of minutes in arguably the fourth best league in the world at the moment, the Nationalliga. And it's also that Laval is stacked. Who would you have on the first pairing in Laval? We assume Logan Mayu is going to come down, and you want him to play heavy minutes as well, especially both on the power play, where you want to see David Reinbacher play as well. So having him going to Kloten, a little bit like Adam Engström playing in Sweden still, rather than in Laval. You got three players that are eating heavy minutes in three different teams, and that is great for development.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Laval's defense, you mentioned that. That's a really good point, because they have Nicolas Baudin already in Laval. They have Baudin, Bisson, Struble, Trudeau. They have Tourigny. They have Keeper. They have, these are guys are just already in Laval. I mean, Keeper has to clear waivers. He's on waivers right now as we're recording this. But then you also have at least two of Baron, Mayu, Norlander, at least two of those who will go down. Like, where do you find minutes for all these guys? It's not, you're not sending Reinbacher to the ECHL. You're not sending Norlander to the ECHL. You're not sending, no. You know, guys like that. They have Olivier Gallipo too, who's an AHL player. Like they have a lot of bodies there. And I think that sending Reinbacher back to Switzerland, where he's going to get top minutes, he's out of the spotlight. Like, people aren't going to look at every single game he plays and be like, because people, let's face it. If he was in Laval, people wouldn't watch Laval games. They would look at the box score, be like, why did he not get any points? Right? Like that's what they would do. And there's no time on ice, so you don't see that part. Like, you know, you're gonna see 0 points and a minus one, be like, oh, he's a bust. Right? That's what people would do in Laval. Let's be honest here.
Yep.
And you know,
well, they will do the same with Kloten, though.
They will, but less eyes, right? Less expectation. Right? He was there last year, they know kind of what to expect, and I think he'll probably perform better there too, than he would in Laval. Like, he's gonna be there's a lot of talk about him being like on that, the same kind of, you know, what are the names we heard before the draft or after the draft? It was Yossi, Sider, guys that took big jumps in their draft plus 1 year, right?
Sider was even draft plus two, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? So those guys are going to be kind of like the benchmark, and let him go where he's comfortable. Like, just let him be a 18-year-old under. Like, I love this. I personally love it. Like, they couldn't really do it with Slavkovsky because he didn't really have a contract anywhere in Europe. You could loan him, but it's tricky, right? Now he's going to – Reinbacher's going to a place he's comfortable. He knows what to expect. The team is expecting him to do big things. He's probably going to be, you know, on their top pairing. Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, but I'm pretty sure
he will be on the top pairing.
Yeah, top power play. Like, he's going to be a guy that's going to be leaned on. His teammates already appreciate him, right? Like, he's going to go there and have a really good time and just develop out of the spotlight. You know, there's going to be highlights here and there of things he does, and you're going to be, you know, watching him very closely and writing EPRs, and you won't have to write about Adam Engström all the time anymore. But it's going to be a lot of, I think this is a great move, and I love that they did it so early that we're not asking this question into next week. And just send him back. You know, there's no question of whether he's going to be in the NHL or not. No question whether he's going to be in Laval. We're going to send him down, even though it was done like at 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night. It's fine. Get it out of the way. Get it done. And people wake up on Sunday and realize he's not there anymore.
He can also act as a mentor for Vincent Rohrer, who just plays down the road from him. So, you know, you kill two birds with one stone, basically. You know, Vincent Rohrer is back in Switzerland to play, and he's playing for Zurich. And it's a regional rivalry with Kloten, but it's just good if, you know, you have someone going through the same thing as you are.
It's just it's a catch-22 for the Habs every time with a top draft pick. Either they keep them, right, and they play them NHL or AHL, and if they don't immediately crush it, the whole fan base goes, you rushed him, and you shouldn't have done that. You should have let him go cook for another year. Now, this time, because they're not expecting and they're not, you know, relying on him to come up and immediately start playing big minutes in the NHL, and so they send him back to Europe. They don't decide to put him in Laval. And everybody's going, well, what the fuck? Why are we not giving him a shot this year? He looks like he might be ready. And it's like, again, it's a catch-22 for the Habs. Whatever they do, there's always going to be a second fan base that's going to say that was the wrong decision. And I think for once, they've actually done it right here. I think you're not expected by anybody to make the playoffs. If they did somehow sneak into the playoffs, it would be a big surprise, right? So as such, you should look at it as anybody who has the opportunity to develop somewhere other than the NHL, it's not a bad thing to let them do that. And that's what they've done here. And I think it makes perfect sense. I would have liked to maybe see, I'll say the same thing that I said for Huet and Beck. I would have liked to maybe see him get one more game before they send him back to Europe, but I'm not against the decision overall.
I think the big thing is, you know, people only look at development being wrong when it doesn't work out. Right? Like no one looks at Nick Suzuki be like, oh, the Canadians really, really did well in their development there, right? Nobody does that. Nobody looks at Keaton Gooley and be like, oh, the Canadians really aced Gooley's development, right? No, they just look at like Slavkovsky and Galchenyuk and Kokkinen and be like, oh, they messed up. They messed up. Like they don't know how to develop. Half their team last year was developed and played in the NHL last year. You know, Jordan Harris is another example of that. Like there's so many guys that they did well with development and nobody like Arbor Jacki is a good example, right? Like he was brought in late. He was a late bloomer, but he still spent his last year in junior under the Canadians' tutelage, right? Like he was with the Canadians for the entire season, makes the NHL right out of junior, and the Canadians get zero credit. They're like, oh yeah, everyone was expecting him to go to AHL. He goes to the NHL, performs probably better than expected. And that's the thing with development and drafting is like nobody cares if you get it right. They only care if you get it wrong, right? Like and that's the thing with Reinbacher. Like if he comes back next year, makes the NHL, no one's gonna be like, oh, the Canadians, there's a lot of credit for sending him to Kloten. It'll be whoever is their number one pick in 2023, they're gonna be like, oh, well, why didn't they do this with him? And it'll be a vicious cycle all over again. Or they'll look at Slavkovsky, who's still, you know, if he's not a top line player by the end of this year, like, oh, you really screwed up his development. And yeah, like Matt says, it's a catch-22, damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah, you don't hear anybody giving the Habs credit for Joshua Roy's development. No, I've never heard a single person say, hey, they did a good job.
Not even Matt Ray does that.
Hey, that's not true. I have given them at least a measure of credit, but I like to pump his tires personally for all the work that he put in. But one of the things that he said after his last camp was he said, listen, they told me that I need to work on my 200-foot game. They've given me a lot of pointers on what I need to do to be better. And then we saw him in that last year in Sherbrooke become a defensive stalwart on the wing. He's shutting teams down. He's playing against top opposition, goes to the World Juniors, doing the same thing there, shutting people down. Clearly, the Habs had an influence on that, and clearly, junior giving him time to cook was part of that. And look, I think they did a great job with him, and I think Jared, that's an important point that you mentioned there, is that we never hear people giving them credit when they do it right. It's always when they do it wrong that's when you hear people the loudest and pointing at those examples and just saying, "Well, their development is broken." Right? It's sometimes you got to look at some of those success stories and go, "Hey, well, when they were more patient, that's when it worked."
All the good development thanks to Alex Burrows.
Well, there you have it. It is the conclusion that Anton slams home with a wicked wrister from the slot on the power play on a pass from Henrik and Daniel. Obviously, we don't know who's who. But it's been a pleasure to have you guys on. I hope you all enjoyed a very long podcast for being us this time. We'll be back shortly. Correct me if I'm wrong, Matt. Monday, with the bottom 6 minutes?
Oh, well, yeah, we'll have another one after Monday's game, absolutely.
And Jared, the question is, when does the female hockey podcast start?
I'm trying to figure that out because I don't want to do too many weeks of me just doing nothing. But yeah, we're going to have, I guess I'll break the news here. We're going to have a Women's Hockey Wednesday podcast, probably every second week to start. We'll try and do that. But training camps don't open until November, so probably not until then, I would say, Pat.
But you have another project coming up where we preview the different teams of the Atlantic Division. We're looking forward to that. Anton, you have been working the whole episode through. Thank you so much for your input. And everyone out there, enjoy your holiday on Monday, and try to remember why it's there.